She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everyone. You are indeed listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And again, thank you so much for being with me today. We're going to share with you an amazing ongoing success story about a topic that interests me greatly, and in fact, one that I spent most of my adult life dedicated to, which is at-risk youth. And I really don't like that label. They're really not at risk. They're in many cases overlooked. I think we should call them overlooked youth after 35 years in health and human services. I'm going to be interviewing two people from an organization or a program called Mind Drive. Linda Buchner, and if I say that wrong, Linda, correct me, Buchner it might be, and Steve Reese, who will be joining us in just a minute after I do a few quick announcements. So thank you so much, both of you. I cannot wait to share with the world about Mind Drive. Today's show is sponsored by the Fairfax Companies. If you do live in Tucson and if you do need organic compost, they sell the highest grade. If you have post-construction or landfill waste, please think Fairfax. They're locally owned and they are certainly committed to a healthy planet. Jason Tankersley is the owner of that company. They have three landfills and they try to do everything they can to use anything that is brought to their landfills. He's got an entrepreneurial and environmentally committed spirit. Also, please remember to join me every Saturday live here at noon, Arizona time, at Mrs. Green's World. Always want to remind you, you can listen to your iPhone or Droid. I have a friend who's on her way to New York City today, and I sent her a text. She just got a new iPhone. I said, don't forget, it's easy to listen to me on your iPhone. And all of the podcasts from my show live on my website. They're right there for your listening pleasure at mrsgreensworld.com. Connect with me on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest. If you have questions, email me, info@mrsgreensworld. And I would love to do a special request to all of you out there that are on Facebook and following me so loyally. There was a bug on Facebook this week, and I lost about 200 followers, which for our team was discouraging. We were close to 4,000. We put a lot of work into providing quality content. So check and see if you've been kicked off and refollow Mrs. Green. And another very short story before I begin. This is brought to you from one of our other sponsors. Because our show is about kids today and people really care about the kids they work with, when you hear actually what Steve and Linda have done with a group of other people, it's so powerful. It's such an important message. And EcoBella is one of our newest sponsors, and they believe in helping kids, in helping the four-leggeds especially. They are big animal rights activists. They are against testing on animals, animal cruelty. It's one of their core values in the sourcing of their organic, healthy products for our skin. But they have something called the Invincible Spirit Award, which I thought I would talk about today because of Mind Drive. They recognize people who give back to the community in any way. So you can post your story on Invincible Spirit. You actually get a $10 gift certificate from them if you do it. But the most important thing to me is they want to hear about if you're cleaning up a park on the weekend or getting groceries for a person that might be homebound. They really want to hear about it and honor you and post your story. So I think there's lots of kids from Mind Drive that should be posting because of their Invincible Spirit. So let's get on with the show. Steve and Linda, thank you so much for taking time out of your Saturday to share with us about Mind Drive. And I would like to start, instead of me doing it, because I've already heard enough of my own voice, talk to me about your backgrounds. And Linda, I know you said that you're going to be Steve's wingman, kind of. So why don't you start? You have a background in contemporary communications, but just tell us a little bit about who you are so our audience has a feel for the great guests I have on the show today.
Well, first, thanks so much for having us. I'm excited to be here. My background is in advertising, actually, in marketing. I spent about 15 years in commercial photography and then moved into film and video production as a director of marketing of a kind of high-profile video production company in Kansas City. And then I got more and more interested in the sort of emergence of cause marketing. I really, really wanted to turn my my expertise and my interest into aligning corporations with causes that made sense to them and had a mutual benefit. And so I started my own consulting company about 4 years ago that with that goal in mind, and ended up doing a project with one of the urban high schools where Steve was actually teaching an after-school program, and met Steve, and that's kind of how MindDrive came about, was through a collaboration from that meeting, actually. But my background is in advertising, in mostly photography and film and video production.
And I don't ever stick to the script. Anybody that knows me says I'm unscriptable. Is that one of the reasons why you have a really great website? And I really look at a lot of websites. It's very hip. It pops. You've got great video on there. Is that some of your background and influence on that website? For the size that you are, and I don't mean that in any negative way at all, it's a really powerful website.
We are, thank you very much. We are so blessed to have one of our co-founders and key mentors is Tom Strongman, and he has had a long career as an automotive journalist, and so we have beautiful photographs. And so I would have to say it's a collaboration between he and I and a bunch of other people, and then, of course, the company that I most recently worked for has helped us out numerous times on video production. So
it's just one of the many things I love about the story. There's another part. It's a collaborative, it's people giving back, and you two are, you know, you get in the spotlight, but you never hesitate to bring up all of the other people that have helped collaborate to make this possible. So, Steve, let's talk a little bit about you and your background. I want to save the best till last because it intrigues me the most. You're a race car driver, but you had a background before that. So give us a little bit about who is Steve?
I was an architect for, I graduated in 1972 from Kansas State University and was an architect in Denver, actually in Phoenix for a while in Denver, and I finally lived in Kansas City, and I had my own practice for 28 years, and as part of that practice, I had a involvement with a school called De La Salle in Kansas City that was for at-risk kids, and it was a mentoring program for the seniors that were involved in taking some junior college classes. So I sold my practice and retired, and I was out of town for a while. I came back, and I just got involved with De La Salle again. And I had this sense working with these kids that even though they might be a little misdirected, they seem to have quite a bit of determination. And so I started teaching a class. I asked them if I could teach a class in creativity and entrepreneurial studies, and they said yes. And that was a huge immersion for me. I taught a college class in architecture once, but I'd never dealt with, you know, a difficult environment. And so it was a couple of years of that class that led to it evolving out of the class to become a standalone 501c3 called MindDrive, because we literally, the students were doing all sorts of creative projects. And each, because I was a car guy, each semester we would end with a car project where they would design a car. And it was all done with, you know, small models, and we actually built some full-scale models, but they were all just for shape only. But the kids kept saying, why can't we build a real car? Why can't we build a real car? And I kept saying, we can't do that. And after about the 100th time, I thought, you know, I'm the one that's trying to get these kids to think outside the box, and I felt like I was the one in the box. So I felt obligated to try to find a way to give them what they wanted. And so we found an old Indy car that had been badly wrecked, and we got it, used the center section, and had to repair it. But we used that as kind of the core of the car. So we had the structure and the suspension, the steering, and the brakes, though we replaced the brakes. We used that core element to then have the kids design the body for a fully enclosed car, and then they design the driveline and learn about and how to develop and fabricate the electrical components of an electric car. And so that's how the whole thing gets started.
And typically I start with what is blank and mind drive. I wanted people to get a feel for who the two of you are and then go to mind drive. I can tell you the way that I heard about it and got excited about it is that I am partners with Pima Association of Governments, and one of their programs is Clean Cities. So I got an email from them asking me to come see this car, mind drive, this electric vehicle, and I'm Mrs. Green and I'm interested and they're a great partner. And it was hotter than the inside of hell that day. Seriously. I'm like, oh my God, I have
imagine
to go
driving
out.
An air conditioned
no,
car.
No, that's why, I mean, it's like I got there and I said to my husband, oh my God, I can't believe I said yes that I'm going to go to this. And as with all things, when you honor your commitment and show up, I was one of the first to get there and definitely one of the last to leave because of the kids and the mentors and the excitement of what you did. Built an electric vehicle that you were taking coast to coast, and added to that to me was the component that it was probably 107, and we had a little, you know, tent that everybody was trying to like scoot under and pour water on our heads. But I was so totally blown away, and as soon as I got back in the car, I called Kelly King, my traffic person and my dear friend, and said, Kel, we've got to get these people on the show. What they're doing, the world has to hear about through Mrs. Green's World. How did you come up with the name Mind Drive? I couldn't find that anywhere.
You know, it's just kind of one of those things that hit. Obviously, we were talking about cars and drive, and mind is, you know, dealing with innovation and trying to create new mindsets for kids that, you know, our mission statement's pretty simple. It's to inspire students to learn, to expand their vision of the future, and then to create, you know, value and jobs for them in the future.
And, you know, if anybody doesn't get goosebumps listening to that, they should wake up. Because that's pretty clear-cut mission about what the power and passion that you all bring to this project that is indeed changing the world. So can we start talking a little bit about what you decided to do in terms of, you have the mission statement. Let's talk about some of the points along the way before we get to the cross-country trip. What kinds of things influenced your direction? I mean, it was a process, you said. So were there some major factors that you can share with people who are listening that might want to start their mind drive too, which wouldn't that be wonderful?
Oh, yeah, and that's hopefully in our future. I think the thing to underscore is that the most important aspect of what we do is education. And what we're trying to do is, I don't know, everyone's probably heard stories of how a lot of urban youth that are at risk don't have much of a vision for the future. A lot of them don't think they're going to live past 21. There's a real ceiling to what they can see.
And they don't have dreams. I mean, they don't have dreams. That's what was the biggest shocker when I started working with kids 35 years ago. What's your dream for the future? And they'd say things like, not go to jail, which is not a dream.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, really? Mm-hmm. Let's try to refocus a little.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so get them to dream.
Yeah, and it's even more than that. It's by our process is we have roughly one mentor per student. And the
unbelievable.
The mentors are, and that's, you know, you can't legislate education. It really takes, you know, the old saying, it takes a village to raise a child. People just need to make the commitment to fix their school districts. And I don't mean to get on a bandwagon, but literally our success is based on individuals becoming involved. And we have mechanical engineers and electrical engineers and welders and metal fabricators and automotive journalists and architects and carpentry guys, and you know, it's a really broad spectrum of people. And what happens is the kids get into the program, and we have a lot of different things they could get involved in, but they tend to migrate one place or another, and they end up spending, you know, 16 or 18 weeks shoulder to shoulder with an individual that could be maybe an electrician or a welder. And guess what? At the end of that period, they don't want to be a basketball player anymore. They want to be an engineer. And that may be a stretch, But the idea of them thinking.
I don't think it's a stretch at all. I talked to some of those kids, and I don't think it's a stretch at all. And just a little press pause here for a minute. We could do a show, and you should encourage me and stay on me to do a show just taking off on what you said about let's not leave it to the government to fix our schools. Let's leave it to us, the citizens, and I don't want more legislation. You can go off on that tangent on Mrs. Green's World any day, all day long, and twice on Sunday, because really, people, if you want it to change, get involved and pump up the volume of your own voice. Look at what you guys have done. So you decided to connect one mentor. I want to reiterate that so people really, you know, you kind of gloss over it. One mentor for every kid. Life-changing right there in and of itself. It's got all the factors of crime prevention, of helping to give this kid the greatest chance of success, of their succeeding in school. I know lots about mentoring programs. I started one that's 17 years old, and the people that are still involved, we want it on our tombstones that we were involved in a program called Building the Future. So back to Mind Drive, because you are building the future. So things that influence your direction. I can stay on track, believe it. I go these little segues, but I come right back.
Let me throw this in. We don't pair up a student with a mentor.
It's the ratio. Okay.
It's just a ratio,
and
what happens is the students tend to migrate towards their area of interest. And we have two programs, one contemporary communications and the other automotive design. And we have kids that are in the automotive program that suddenly you see them with a camera, and they've shifted, you know, and they're involved in a communications class. And we let that happen naturally. We don't inhibit kids from trying to find their interest. So it's not a linkage that we make, it's a linkage that they make.
Right.
Which, again, they respect a lot more if they make the linkage themselves.
Love that you added that.
MindDrive evolved, and the mentoring thing has evolved. We've learned a lot about how to teach the kids and how to teach the mentors. You can imagine some guy who's been sitting behind a computer for 30 years who's now going to be a teacher. There's a lot that he needs or she needs to know about how to deal with, especially a tough bunch of kids, maybe. So a lot of what we have to do is training even with the mentors. And when we really break down everything to the nth degree so that we have specific tasks for each mentor, and then we don't have over four students that might work on a particular project so that we don't lose the student's interest and a connection to whatever they're doing.
And can I just ask you, because I think the details matter, what kinds of things? Like, I remember when I started our mentoring program, we had to talk to the mentors about don't be discouraged if a kid doesn't show up once or twice. You have no idea what's going on in their home. What are some of the other tools that you give to the mentors to give them some insight into, you know, probably a very different population than they might have been used to working with in their careers?
Well, the first thing we do, the kids come in, and Linda really could talk to this better than I could, but the first thing we do is we interview the students. Linda, why don't you pick up on that?
Well, we interview the students with a social scientist who sort of helps identify what has led them to be falling below their peer group.
Right.
And it's a variety of things. It could be English as a second language issue. It could be poverty. You know, it could be dangerous neighborhoods, whatever it is. And so we give that information to the mentors so that they don't get frustrated when,
right.
You know, something happens, or if a kid's ADHD. We need to understand those things. But we also try to manage the expectations of the mentors that they're not going to be, you know, like saving the world. There's a lot of times where you're really tempted to perhaps give them money, or, you know, it's almost like put a Band-Aid on something.
Yes, make you feel better, and them. Yes, I agree.
Right, and that can be a little bit more destructive. And so we also try to work on a little bit of positive psychology as well, because I think that just in general, and sometimes parents do this without even knowing about it, like a kid can come home with straight A's, and not much is said, but if a kid comes home with a C-, there's a lot of attention focused on why did this happen, and let's get this fixed, and blah, blah, blah. Well, we try to spend a lot of time on the positives. We give a lot of good feedback. We give a lot of encouragement, because I think the number one common thread in what defines an at-risk student in our book is low self-esteem, lack of self-confidence, and a lack of a positive voice in their life.
Okay, so, Linda, we're going to have to go to a short break, and I get the sign, and what I've been told by my engineer, Gina, you have to do more smoother segues. So we will take a short break. We are having a wonderful conversation with Linda Buchner and Steve Reese about Mind Drive. Please stay here with me. Lots more interesting info to share on Mrs. Green's World.
University of Arizona professor John Pollard asked the students in the Posada San Pedro Hall to consider bringing solar energy to the dorm. Just 3 years later, the Solar Cats, a group of students who took up the cause, have installed 44 solar panels on the dorm, saving 20,000 kilowatt hours of energy and reducing greenhouse gas emissions by 14 metric tons every year. Talk about students with a sunny future. The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
Hi, I'm Abbott Taylor. With over 35 years creating jewelry in Tucson, no one has more experience in designing and making diamond jewelry in Tucson than Abbott Taylor Jewelers. Please come in and see some of the thousands of designs we have created, or come in and have us design something original just for you. Whether you're looking for a simple and stylish graduation gift, your engagement ring, or a breathtaking jewelry piece to celebrate an important birthday or anniversary, you can't beat our competitive diamond pricing. With 100% trade-up guaranteed, set in an Abbott Taylor jewelry design, always using earth-friendly recycled gold. Abbott Taylor Jewelers, exquisite jewelry designs and exceptional diamond deals created right here in Tucson for over 35 years. Abbott Taylor Jewelers at 6383 East Grant Road, on Facebook and on the web at atdiamonds.com. Diamond designs for everyone. Abbott Taylor Jewelers.
Hi, this is Mrs. Green with some great news about the all-new 2012 VW Passat. It's 2012 Motor Trend Car of the Year, best in class for legroom, and has standard Bluetooth technology. VW thought of everything by giving the Passat a brand new sleek design that conveys confidence and assertiveness. If you're looking for the best ownership experience possible and a great new Passat, visit Chapman Tucson at 4600 East 22nd Street between Columbus and Swan.
You know how they say your donation to Goodwill changes lives?
Well, it's true.
It's true.
Well, it's true.
Goodwill.
Goodwill gave my son a chance.
My mom, hope.
My brother, a sense of purpose.
And help my dad find a job.
Goodwill helps thousands of people.
People like us every year.
People like us.
Every year.
Your donations to Goodwill do change lives. Please donate today.
Habitat for Humanity's Habitstar is changing the world. By selling new and used building and home improvement materials to the public, the Habitstar is diverting more than 250 tons from the landfill each year. To donate, call 520-889-7200. Stop by and shop today. The Habitstar is located at 935 West Grant Road. Proceeds from all the sales go to Habitat for Humanity Tucson. For more information, go to habitattucson.org or call 520-889-7200.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And we are certainly giving you something wonderful to think about today. And not just wonderful. That's kind of a soft word. I want to say powerful. Something really, really, really powerful. It's about a program called Mind Drive. We're interviewing Linda Buchner and Steve Reese. And Linda, am I saying your name right?
That's a big thing
for me. And Steve Reese, who have been involved for quite some time with a program called Mind Drive. If you're listening on your computer and you want to open another window, it's minddrive.org. Some life-changing, draws you right in pictures of lots of happy kids, engaged kids, and mentors who are making a difference. They are inspiring students to want to learn and expand their vision of the future. So again, thank you for being here with us. One last question from the last segment, and then I would love to talk about the cross-country trip because I'm sure there's so much to share in this segment about that. What about the to me, when I look at this program, I really do think it's education, it's technology, it's the environment, and it's entrepreneurism at its finest. Do you guys have anything you want to weigh in on about, are they all parts, the equal parts of the equation, or do you think there's a major key or a thread that has to be focused on in order to make MindDrive succeed?
It's kind of like saying, which of my children do I love the most?
Because to me, I can't see really which one outweighs the other. We're talking equal.
It isn't equal. It is education. And we use the tools of, or the vehicle, if you would, of the cars, the electric cars, and technology, and environmental awareness. And our kids come out with a sense of being stewards of the environment. And they were recently up in Akron, Ohio, at Bridgestone's headquarters, and it was a grand opening for the new technology center. And the students were giving presentations to over 300 people on, their technical exploits. It was a great marriage of education and technology, and Bridgestone has a huge impact on the environment, and they have a commitment to a stronger green involvement in their community. So, yeah, I think it's a marriage, and you can't separate the two. But
you can't pick a favorite kid. But I see what you say. I mean, education—it's the underpinnings of that brings about everything else for them to learn about the technology, respect the environment, and hopefully become entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. How did you get the money? I mean, it costs money to do what you did. Did a school district take you on? Was it a public-private partnership? That can be the daunting piece that discourages people, but it obviously did not stop all of you.
We really have scrounged around everywhere.
That's a great answer.
We've developed some great relationships. I mentioned Bridgestone; they've been a major sponsor of our trip across country. Hertz called us, and they had heard through the Sierra Club connection somewhere about what we were doing, and they got involved and made a major contribution in our trip across country. Sonic, Applebee's, Sonic's about cars and drive-ins, Applebee's about education. And so, we've found corporate clients, and what Linda talked about earlier was, we try to marry ourselves with business and industry that has a common interest and direction. Bridgestone is interested in the environment, and they have a product called Ecopia Tires. And so they looked at us and said, let's get involved in this because it's about what we do, and it's helping kids and it's helping education. And, they saw lots of really great reasons. Hertz, as an example, has a big program on sustainability. So we've been able to do pretty well in a corporate sense, and we're building relationships locally. We have our local utility, Kansas City Power and Light, is funding a mentor development program. And we have a lot of small individual gifts from people locally, and we actually have kind of a trickle, constant trickle, from people around the country who have heard about the program and, just appreciate what's going on.
And hopefully that trickle will turn into a little bit more of a stream after we spread the word through Mrs. Green's world. I really hope it does. It's such a worthwhile program where your dollars are really going to make a difference. Okay, that's great. Can we move now to the cross-country trip, unless there's anybody else that you want to give a shout-out to? Because I love that. I love to, honor thy donors is a really good commandment when you have a nonprofit. It's like, yeah, give them play, because without them, you can't move forward.
That's true. And the great thing is they're all there in the true spirit, and we don't see anybody that's taking advantage of us or trying to push us one way or the other. It's just been really heartfelt, and we've really appreciated all the people that have gotten involved from a corporate and individual basis.
Pretty amazing. And the food was great at the event I went to, by the way. I just was making jokes saying I didn't come for the heat, I came for the food. But then I realized I came for the kids, so it was great. So can we talk a little bit about the trip, Steve and Linda? It blew my mind, and I'm not kidding. It was a trip with this car that the kids made, from San Diego to Jacksonville, Florida. And we have to remember to tell everybody why you picked Jacksonville. It went on from June 11th through June 23rd, there were probably not any cool days along the way for a lot of that trip. So how did you decide to do a trip like this? Why did you decide to do a trip like this?
Well, we had done two cars in the past, and they were extremely efficient, lightweight, everything we could do to make it simple we had done. And they had built this an old Indy Champ car, Lola, into this car, and we'd gotten experience with that, and we'd done another car, and then there was the question, could we do a car that we could put on the road and wouldn't be just a prototype but an actual road-going car? And then we had a meeting to talk about what we would do, and we put at the top of the list, well, we could just drive a car cross-country. Everybody goes, oh, no, you know, let's think about going across Missouri. And then someone said, let's think about going around the airport, you know. And so we had this big meeting, and we brought in some pretty big guns. We had an engineer from Dow Kokum, battery company, who gave us quite a bit of expertise, and he'd worked on the space shuttle program. We had some really great minds, and we said, why couldn't we go across country? Long story short,
wow.
they all said, you know, the technology is there. I don't know too many people have done it before, but I think we could do it, and let's do it, you know. And we're all going, well, let's do it, you know. And so, but I was, you know, I'm an architect and I'm not an engineer, and I was relying on them saying, let's do it. And they did. And so the interesting thing was we were going to take our own charging system, and we had two 240 volt generators. Oh. And it allowed us to charge the car, and we would go 60 miles and charge in 60 minutes. So we were dumping a lot of juice in the car every time we charged it. And that was really the question mark: would that system actually work? And we were doing this whole project as a demonstration of we were showing that if there was a distribution system, people could look at an electric car as something other than an urban vehicle.
Right.
You know, could you take a trip from Kansas City to Denver and stop at a couple of Sonics along the way and be able to do a quick charge, grab a cherry limeade, and
right.
make it to Denver, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
So we were really trying to demonstrate that. And if you really looked at the green footprint of what we did, it was pretty terrible. We had, you know, lots of chase cars, and we burned up a lot of fossil fuels to do this. But the point being made was that if the electricity was there, here's an electric car, and this is what it could do. And the car was we got this out of the backyard. It had been sitting for years. It's a 1977 Lotus Esprit.
People have to look at it on the website. They have to see this car. Seeing is believing.
It you know, the car, when it was made, was, you know, pretty tinny. It was, but it was also lightweight, which was Colin Chapman's, his whole thing in life was create race cars that last as long as the race and no longer than that. So they were very minimalistic. And, you know, if you look at a typical, you know, small sedan today, it weighs 4,500 pounds. The Lotus started out life at 2,500 pounds. So you can see that it was a very lightweight car anyway. And then we took it and really started hacking on it. And
right.
We got it down to 1,880 pounds, even with our 320 pounds of batteries. So it was a very lightweight car and very, very simple. Nothing on the car was beyond what was needed. We had no radio. Our speedometer was an iPhone app, and it worked really, really well.
That is so amazing. I love it.
But it really, you know, you can't compare this to a Chevy Volt, and a lot of people like to draw a headline and say, you know, kids do something General Motors couldn't, and it's not a fair comparison because, you know, General Motors does have you know, a lot of safety elements and things that are part of their car that we didn't have. But we do a really good job of pointing to and showing that if a car was more efficient in terms of its weight and aerodynamics, you could have really great results. And the first car the kids did went to Texas Proving Grounds of Bridgestone, and it got between 300 and 445 miles per gallon equivalent.
Oh, my gosh.
And it weighed right at 1,000 pounds. This car weighs 1,880 pounds, and it doesn't have quite the efficiency in the coefficient of drag. But it had the same basic low rolling resistance tires, and but we were able to get between 130 and 240 miles per gallon equivalent on the cross-country trip, depending on our speed. But we, anyway, long story short.
Even though that mileage sounds great, Steve, I did not want to be in that car. There was no part of me that wanted to be in that car, even with that great mileage, because of why? The air conditioning. So it's just, I mean, it there could be a car that would have great mileage. There are, but still, I just had to add my own personal, I'm like, oh, dear God, thank God I don't have to go with them. That was how I felt.
I mean, I'll be really honest. Honestly, we drove that car cross country. And it was from California to Louisiana. It was way over 100 degrees each day.
Oh.
And it really wasn't, like, I wasn't sweating.
Really?
We had air moving through the car. And when we got into Louisiana, there was a really humid day. And we could see the, you know, that was a benchmark for how it feels terrible.
Right,
not having air conditioning. But, again, you know, it's like we use air conditioning, and we could also roll our windows down. And the car was not, you know, just a terrible environment, even over 100 degrees.
It just speaks to how spoiled we all are, and I'm putting myself, I'm saying we.
Yeah,
that would be
exactly.
that would be one of the me. one of the we. Okay.
And when you get in your car and it's got a pneumatic lid on your ashtray, you know, seriously, it's got a spring, it's got pneumatic, it's got a pump somewhere.
Right.
It's probably a 75-pound system somewhere in the car.
Right, right. So let me ask you this. This is probably the most daunting question in the way that I think. I'm not good at this. It's not my strength. I can think on my feet and ask lots of questions, but the logistics. How did you start to even begin with the entourage that you had, the backup that you had to have? I think it was when you say, you know, the carbon footprint, you have to have experiments that show that you can do it, and that requires a little bit more juice up front. So how did you begin to plan? Did people open their homes? I have a million questions around this. Like, where did you stay? How did you pay for all the food? Because I've had teenagers, and they eat a lot. So tell me, who was the logistics coordinator, and what kind of reward did they get?
Well, I'm going to tell you that Linda was really responsible for most of that, and beyond the initial testing that we did for the car to just, you know, to determine that, you know, like the charging system would work and the motor was large enough. Beyond that, it became a big logistics I wouldn't say problem, but it
project.
Was definitely a project.
Project.
And a feat. And Linda, why don't you kind of run through all
Sure. Things? Yeah. Well, you know, you heard about us through your Clean Cities Coalition in Tucson, correct?
Right, right, and Pima Association of Governments, yes.
Yeah, well, we've got a great Clean Cities Coalition here, and they were generous enough to send out an email. Once, actually, Steve didn't mention, he actually drove the route ahead of time so he could kind of see what we were up against.
With air conditioning in his car or not?
With air conditioning, yeah. So he had kind of mapped out, you know, like how far we could go on a charge and which would be the best places to stop and where it's just really a gas station and nothing else there. And so he kind of knew, you know, where the stops were. And from that, we started with, and I called them the first responders, the Clean Cities Coalitions and the Sierra Clubs and the EV enthusiasts.
Okay.
And we started networking through electric vehicle clubs and Sierra clubs and Clean Cities Coalitions. And then they sort of came forward and said, what can we do to support you? What do you need when you get here? Do you need a cool air-conditioned place to charge your car? Do you need a big parking lot? How many people are you with? Can we feed you?
I mean, it
was just amazing, the outpouring of support from them, and they really didn't have a stake in the game as far as like any PR value. I mean, we tried to give them a lot of PR value along the way, but I mean, at the beginning, they didn't really have a stake in it. And then the other part of it was the sponsors, the corporate sponsors, as part of their sponsorship package. They were able to select certain cities where we stopped and made a presentation, and they brought the press and, you know, in their stores. Like, we stopped at Firestone. You met us at a Firestone store. We were at Sonic stores and things like that. So, and then we also did a huge push to schools, because what we wanted was our students to be able to own this project to their peers. So we reached out to superintendents of school districts in all the major cities and even in the small towns to say, you know, can you get a group of students together to see this project? And that was really cool.
Very important. And Linda, I don't know why I have to pick on you, but we have to go to another break. These segments, they fly so hard, but our sponsors do love being a part of Mrs. Green's World. So please stay here with me. We're having a Time Flies because we're having fun interview with Linda Buckner and Steve Reese from Mind Drive. Please stay here with me.
Go deep underwater without getting wet. Study bugs like a real scientist. Make your shadow move in colors. These are just three reasons to visit the exciting hands-on new exhibits at the Children's Museum Tucson, the region's only museum just for kids. For 25 years, we've ignited kids' imaginations at the Children's Museum Tucson. That's something to celebrate. And admission is only $2 on the first Sunday and on the 25th of each month this whole year. Children's Museum Tucson, where imagination and learning connect.
Hi there, this is Mrs. Green. Did you know that the 2012 VW Beetle has been completely redesigned, that it has exciting new features, look, and performance, and that it is one of Oprah's best things for 2012? The best news is Chapman VW has them in stock. Check out the new Beetle at Chapman VW at 4600 East 22nd Street between Columbus and Swan, or visit them at TucsonVW.com. Be sure to tell them that Mrs. Green sent you.
What if you had simple and easy solutions to live, work, and play green? Green Living Magazine, the premier green lifestyle magazine, brings you the latest in organic cooking, gardening, health and wellness, chef and celebrity interviews, as well as easy solutions to clean up your everyday life. Visit greenlivingaz.com for the latest in green news. Buy your subscription and view our network videos. Find us on Facebook and Twitter, and again at greenlivingaz.com.
At the University of Arizona, we're putting solar know-how to work. And it's not just our researchers. Our students are on the job as well. Our student solar racing team, using recycled solar cells from NASA, designed and built a car from scratch that gets the equivalent of over 3,000 miles per gallon. Talk about students who will go far. Really, really far. The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
Welcome back, everybody. You are listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think, we just want you to, and we are sharing a great story to think about today, and a story about how you might get involved some way in your community by hearing what this Mind Drive program is doing. Their sole mission is to inspire students to want to learn, expanding their vision of the future, and being a positive influence on the urban workforce. Where is the downside? I can answer that. There is none. So we are interviewing. I'm so happy to be interviewing Linda Buckner and Steve Reese from Mind Drive. And they took a group of kids and mentors from San Diego to Jacksonville, Florida this past June. It's how I heard about them through the Clean Cities Coalition and Colleen Crown and Shield and Sheila Storm. And they're telling us at this point about the trip and the logistics of planning a trip with how many people total traveled.
There were about 20 of us.
Yeah, it just seemed like more because I couldn't get to talk to everyone that I wanted to in the time that you were there. So you had help from Clean Cities Coalitions and some of your sponsors, and a very, not surprising to me because of the people that I interview from all around the country, warm welcome and offers to help you. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Yeah. It was astounding.
Okay, so you did plan it. I'd love you to talk a little bit about the heart of the project, which is the kids. What was the experience like for the students? Maybe share a couple of stories and then share some of the biggest challenges. I mean, I've got kids and we did road trips, and just even with them being our kids, there are challenges on long road trips. So tell us about some of the experiences.
Well, I'll tell you, you know what, we were so proud of these students because they took such pride in their project. And so they were excited all along the way. I mean, a lot of them had never flown in an airplane before, never swam in an ocean before. So they were excited for the experience of the trip first and foremost. But then we set up a structure to keep them engaged because there was a lot of time on the road.
Right.
And it's a big, long road trip. And so every day, this was part of the logistics, the students were assigned. We had presenters that were assigned for the day. So, you know, like I had mentioned before the break, we made lots of different presentations to schools and environmental groups at almost every charging stop location. And so there was two presenters assigned every day. There was someone assigned to social media, so they were tweeting and Facebooking and giving shout-outs to our sponsors, uploading photographs. There was a photographer assigned every day. There was a writer assigned and someone on research that would help the writer, and they would look up places that we were driving through, look up what the dunes were about, what mountain range we were going through, all this kind of stuff, so that that night they would write up a blog post. And then there was also one person assigned to the analytics of the car. So every time the car stopped, that kid would jump out and get with the engineer and take the temperature of the motor and look at the amperage. And so we were kind of gathering our analytics along the way. So the kids were engaged every hour of the day, every charging stop.
Right up to 10:30 at night.
Keep them busy.
Yeah.
That's great parenting advice, and it's great educator advice, and it's really integrated learning. They got to have all of this integrated experiences and make it purposeful. It's ingenious, you guys. Was there a coolest thing that happened? Was there something that you just want to say, oh my gosh, Mrs. Green, we have to tell you about this one?
You know, I think this may sound odd, but one of the coolest things was every morning at roughly 6 o'clock, every student was in the lobby of the hotel. And we never, except for once, I should say.
One of the coolest things.
And the students were there and the mentors were there, and we never left the hotel late, ever. And the other aspect of it was that the car made the whole trip and didn't break. And I mean, nothing against Lotus, but on the way home from Jacksonville, I got a call from the president of the Lotus Club of America, and he said, you know, if that would have been a regular Lotus, it would have never made the trip.
Oh, my gosh. There's full disclosure. Oh, Steve, that is great. Oh, my gosh. And the fact that the kids were on time, I hope people are not glossing over that either. They're teenagers, after all. So that is unbelievable, unbelievable. And you put some, thank you. I don't know who prepared. I felt like my show was prepared for me. And then I added the Mrs. Green piece to it with some of my own questions. But one of the things that you wrote about was who asked the best question. Was there a best question? Not to pick a favorite student. But
people
love to know those things.
This is pretty cool. We are in the middle of nowhere. And I don't know if I can tell the name of the town we were in.
Dateland, Arizona.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Forgive me, Dateland. I don't mean to.
Forgive Dateland is right.
But it is. It's like it's out in the desert plain.
It's a spot.
There's a middle school and a grade school. And behind the school, they have this huge solar collector. And it actually is also a shield for the seating at the baseball diamond. And so we meet out there. And the middle school kids, they come out first and they start asking questions. And, you know, it's like prying questions at them a little bit. The grade school kids come, and, man, they were on it. You know, it's like, can you tell me this? You know, they were getting into fine detail. They were very spirited and, you know, ready to get engaged and wondered how they could get involved. And, I mean, it was really interesting to see the sophistication of those little bitty kids.
Awesome is that? That's a great part of the story, Steve.
Even more so than the middle school kids. And another interesting thing, what was the name of the town in I always get this wrong. The small town with the spring. It was a little bit.
Oh, Belmoria.
Belmoria, Texas. And
they have a natural spring in the middle of the desert. And that's about all there is in that town.
But it's a little small town. And this woman strolls out of a hotel, a little hotel, and she starts talking about the decision she made in buying her Prius. And she was very informed. a guy from across the street walked over, and he had like 15 lawnmowers stacked up against his building. He comes over and starts talking about how he's trying to find a hub drive for a Volkswagen conversion he's doing. And I'm thinking, wow, here we are in the middle of the desert. And everybody we talk to is informed and is kind of environmentally oriented. And, you know, they're not like members of the Sierra Club. These are just people. And they're just normal citizens anywhere. So there was, it was an eye-opener to see the awareness of the general public about the environment and about, you know, different alternative fuels. And
so there's the spring. Were you able to, like, jump in?
Yeah.
Oh, my God, yeah. That is the greatest part. And when you talk about Dateland, it makes me, like, start perspiring just thinking about it. That's one of the hottest places on Earth as well. I mean, no kidding. Getting up on time, I love it. Was there a town that stood out for their kindness or, you know, fried chicken and gravy biscuits or anything like that? Was there a town, or did you feel really incredibly welcomed everywhere you went? I don't want to pick the favorite kid. I don't want to pick the favorite town either, but it's nice to you know, to see if you had a really Kodak experience somewhere.
We've had a couple. We've had a couple, too, that stand out for me. One is Covington, Louisiana, where, again, we didn't know what we were getting into as far as town size, but we did hear from the mayor there to give them a call once we got to the exit and meet at the Chick-fil-A, and they would have a police escort for us. And so we did, and there was a police officer waiting for us, and then there was a police officer at the next corner, and then at the next corner, and then at the next corner. Oh. And so we had, like, this huge entourage police escort into this little town, which was Americana at its best. I mean, cobblestone streets, American flags on these beautiful front porches. And we go to the town square, and they have, like, an amphitheater set up, and there's about 250 kids there, and the mayor is there, and the podium, and it was like, wow, they rolled out the red carpet for us, and that made our students feel like rock stars.
It had to. I mean, just thinking about, talk about being put in a positive spotlight for all the right reasons. I mean, it just, that is a great part. And I don't know if there are pictures up on your website of that, but I sure hope so. Oh my gosh, Linda, that's over the top. Can you tell I'm a little enthusiastic about this program?
It just
touches so much of what I believe is an answer for all that's right about the world. Okay, let's talk a little bit about the future, because as awful as it may sound to me, I always say maybe I should go to a 2-hour show, because then we could have had students on and we could have talked about how you're going to implement this nationally. But before we segue to the future, what was the most rewarding aspect for each of you personally? Do you have something that you'd be willing to share on the world airwaves? I had retweets from Buenos Aires this morning, so people are listening there. What was your most heartfelt, or the thing that you're going to keep from this trip the most?
You know, I think it was this linkage. It's an educational cross-country is a metaphor of this connector between everyone that the kids bumped into. And every 60 miles, the kids would make a presentation. And when it was all said and done, they had spoken to students that were grade school, middle school, high school, tech schools. They had spoken to...
Old school, me.
Yeah, old school, utility groups, Sierra Club, Clean City. I mean, all of these different people they had connected with. And there was this common sense of appreciation and wonder at what the kids had done. And I think that obviously our kids came home with a tremendous sense of confidence. And we had a two and a half hour kind of closing lunch. And it was at an Applebee's, and there was a regional guy, their marketing person was there, and he stayed through the whole 2.5 hours of testimonials. And it was tearful. The kids were, you know, loving the mentors, and the mentors were loving the kids. And so I think the thing that came out of it literally was what we saw that the kids learned and gained from it. Not only just jumping in the ocean when it seemed like it was going to be 12 degrees and in their full clothes.
Right, I mean, right.
Their experiences and having Cajun food, but it was literally their sense of confidence.
Love it, love it, love it. Linda, what about you?
Okay, well, real quickly, my biggest thing was expecting great things from this demographic of students. You know, I just think that they have a lower expectation in their life. And when you go into a relationship with them expecting them to do great things, they do. And they surprise themselves, they surprise me. It just elevates what is possible for them. So that was a big lesson for me, because I think that, you know, I was probably putting them in a stereotype.
And expect the best. I know that's why I said in the beginning, and I am sure that both of you appreciated, at risk, I don't think so. Not as many advantages that so many of our kids have. So I love that the stories that you're sharing. We have about 5 minutes left or less. I want you to go into, how are you going to not only keep this alive and thrive and healthy, how are you going to help it expand? Because it would be so valuable. It involves so many of the multiple intelligences for learning that help kids succeed in so many ways. It's needed. We need more mechanics. Even if it's just that, we need more mechanical engineers. What are you two and your group, how are you going to do it? Because I'm excited about it.
Well, you know, we're not trying to sit back and tell educators how to do things, but we do have something that tells a story, and it's about kids doing hands-on experiential learning, and it's shown that our real goal here, it's easy for us to get the kids to come to our class.
Right.
We're like fishermen, and we're trying to hook the kids. And the hook is, when they say, "I want to be an engineer," that means they go back to their core school.
Right.
And they study history and social studies and all of those things with more meaning, because they know they need that to be an engineer. So it's, you know, that whole thing of just, where's the fork in the road for the kid? And we all had those forks, you know, places in our life where we made decisions that were either good or bad that took us down the path we're on today. And so we're really trying to find a way to get them at that fork in the road to make the right decision. And a lot of times they don't even see the fork, and they just drive by it and didn't realize it was past them.
Right.
So I think, you know, we aren't the whole answer, but we are maybe the answer to getting them to have confidence, understand that they have capabilities, and that their future is really limitless. The whole thing of at risk, we are working towards those kids because they need it. But MindDrive literally applies to every kid in the world. And I think, you know, in the old days we had shop class and we had home ec and those things. And today, you know, because of liability or, you know, budgets, those things are all gone.
Short-sightedness. See, it's my show, so I can say that. It's like, really? We're going to cut those programs that work for a large majority, a significant population overlooked. Mm-hmm. Okay, the 2 minutes that we have left, if people want to help, because I think I want to just comment on what you said, Steve, about you think globally, act locally, and the most important thing you can do from where I sit is keep on doing what you're doing, because you are changing the world. Because once you change one kid's lives, a world is changed. So that's great. Should this go viral, that's even greater. But how can people help financially? What's your website? If they have questions, who do they contact?
Obviously, our website does have our contact information, and we obviously can use any assistance financially. We, you know, we're doing much better, but it is something where we really...
Every little bit helps, too. People don't have to give $1,000. If, you know, if 100 listeners gave $10 today, that would be helping to support one of the kids or one of the programs or buy some supplies that you need. So don't think you have to be a major donor.
That's right. The other thing is we want this to reach other students, and we're developing, expanding our structure in Kansas City, and we have a beta program with some Explorer Scouts in St. Louis on developing affiliations in other cities.
Okay.
So that's two fronts, but
Okay,
you can go to our website.
MindDrive.org, 2Ds, MindDrive.org. Thank you both for being here with me. The time literally flew. Next week.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Kate Lewis, USDA Bio for, Preferred Program, another just mind-boggler. You guys, stay in touch, Steve and Linda, and let's get some of the kids on here. Make it
Thank
a great,
you so much.
Make
Thank
it a
you.
Great green week.
All right, you too.